The man in the saddle is angular and long-legged. His skin is sun-dyed brown. The gun in his holster is gray steel and rainbow mother-of-pearl. The handle unmarked. But the gun has killed and the man has killed. People call them both the six-shooter.
Around Dodge City and in the territory on West, there's just one way to handle the killers and the spoilers. And that's with a U.S. Marshal and the smell of gun smoke.
Buck Benny, a two-fisted, quick-triggered marksman who shoots from the hip and never misses.
Well, hello again. This is Buck Benny speaking. Welcome to another episode of Gunsmoke and the Six Shooter for our Western Wednesday. I hope you're going to enjoy both episodes today. They both sound wonderful. This Gunsmoke is a really weird episode. There's a lot going on here. So first, there's more advertising than I've heard recently in the episodes. So there'll be an ad for Plymouth. I like it better with Westerns, I think, without commercials, just because the commercials tend to pull you out of the story and out of the Western feeling of the episode, so it doesn't work as well when they have commercials, in my opinion. Second, it's a script by John Meston, and yet Meston is still finding his way. He's finding his voice. His voice, I always think of his writing style as eloquent grit. It's that grittiness that comes, but it's so eloquent and so beautifully put. It's an amazing juxtaposition between the evil and vileness of some of his characters and the beautiful way that he has of bringing Westerns to life with the words that he chooses to use. And I love Meston and his work. This particular episode sounds like, to me, like he'd been listening to some of the Les Crutchfield episodes and trying to write sort of a Les Crutchfield-esque episode, unless Les helped him out writing it, I don't know. But John Meston was still trying to find his voice, I think. And it's a good episode, well written. It just doesn't sound as much like a Meston episode as we're maybe used to with John Meston. And then the third thing about this episode is the crazy use of the organ. The organ, I'm just so not used to hearing it that much on Gunsmoke that it's just kind of overwhelming in this episode. And unfortunately for me, the use of organ in old-time radio just makes it sound so much more dated than the episodes and the shows that don't use organ. So I always have a personal bias against organ music in old-time radio, and I don't know whether you do or not. But anyway, taking that away, it's a great-sounding episode, and just interesting to hear Meston's growth with each episode that he writes. After that, we have, of course, the Six Shooter. In the Six Shooter today, another fantastic episode, lots of great actors in it. You'll hear a lot of great character work. I probably should have brought that to the front and had that be the first episode tonight, but with a Meston script, I like to have Meston come up first. So first we'll have Gunsmoke, and then we'll have the Six Shooter with Jimmy Stewart. And please remember, we're still trying to collect any donations folks can give to the podcast. We're trying to keep both the Judy Garland podcast running and the Jack Benny podcast running. If you could just come to buckbenny.com, and on the right-hand side, go to Patreon or PayPal and just decide how much you'd like to donate. We have lots of subscriptions going on where it's $1 a month, $2 a month, $3 a month, $4 a month, that sort of thing. The cool thing with Patreon, if you go through Patreon, it's very easy to adjust month to month whether you want to have it be $5 that month you donate or whether you want it to be $2 that month. It does subscriptions, which is great, but it also lets you adjust them really easily. Anyway, without further ado, we should probably get right into these episodes. I guess I will have a little more ado in that I just remembered, if you're wanting to hear more Thanksgiving sort of episodes, I find that it's easier to run them on my Judy Garland network, or at least it seems to make more sense there, because on Judy Garland, I have the bigger name stars, and a lot of the big stars were in the Thanksgiving episodes and Christmas episodes and so forth. So I'd really strongly suggest that if you're, really like my Jack Benny podcast, which is great, I'd really like you to try out the Judy Garland podcast, because we have a number of people over there, but not nearly as many listeners as we do on the Jack Benny podcast. And I think the Judy Garland podcast is pretty amazing with some of the shows we run, whether it's the Orson Welles Shadows on Wednesdays, or the Bing Crosby shows that we run, the Jimmy Durante shows. There's just a lot of great, great entertainment there. The Lux Radios, Saturday Night Rerun Suspense episodes, just some great, great shows that you're missing out on if you're just listening to the Jack Benny podcast. So I'd really suggest you go to. It's judy-garland.podomatic.com to get there. Or you can find it on any of your search engines by typing in Judy Garland and Friends dash OTR podcast, and that'll find it really well. Anyway, now, without further ado, here is the show. Enjoy.
Gunsmoke, brought to you tonight by Plymouth, with an invitation for you to visit a Plymouth dealer's tomorrow. Meet the new Plymouth and enter the big $25,000 contest. Throughout Kansas and in the territories on west, there's just one way to handle the killers and the spoilers. And that's with a U.S. Marshal and the smell of gun smoke.
It's here, a new kind of low-priced car.
The exciting 53 Plymouth, completely new, completely beautiful. Yes, it's the new Plymouth for 1953. The first truly balanced car in the low-priced field. More glamorous lines, more powerful engine, more luxurious comfort.
What a beauty. The new 53 Plymouth is lower to the road with a lot lower look. New color schemes and two-tone color harmonies available in all models.
How does she travel? Man, Plymouth puts out the best ride in the business. Smooth as sailing, even in the back seat. And the Plymouth engine's been stepped up to 100 horsepower for pickup with plenty of flash.
Visibility? Say, there's a one-piece curved windshield, a new type with no troublesome distortion, and you sit chair height in a Plymouth, so you get the full benefit of Plymouth's new down-sweeping hood. You really see right down in front of your car. Bigger side windows, too, and a huge wraparound rear window, so everyone gets a view as big as all outdoors.
The new 53 Plymouth's an exciting car, any way you look at it. A great advance in car value at no advance in price. In fact, four new Plymouth models actually cost less than last year.
So don't put off seeing it. Meet the new 53 Plymouth at your nearby Plymouth dealers. If you go in tomorrow, you may win one free in the big Meet the New Plymouth contest.
And now, Gunsmoke, starring William Conrad. The story of the violence that moved west with young America. The story of a man who moved with it. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
The cook sure must have had a bad night, Mr. Dillon.
Well, how do you figure that, Chester?
Well, sir, I never saw so much chili pepper on a couple of poor eggs. He must figure everybody's got a hangover this morning.
Almost everybody usually has of a Sunday around here.
Well, now, I clean forgot all about it being Sunday.
No.
So that's why Jim Cobbett's all dressed up over there, huh? First time I've ever seen him with his hair combed in.
Well, haven't you heard about Jim, Chester? He's going to get married. He's got his wife-to-be coming in on the train from back east today.
Jim Cobbett?
Yeah.
Well, now, what sort of a woman would that be, Mr. Dillon, who'd come clear to Dodge City to marry a fella like Jim?
Nah, Jim's a good man, Chester. It's just that, well, living out on that homestead of his year after year has made him grow a little off-center, so loneliness will do that to a man sometimes.
Morning, Marshal. Chester.
Morning, Hank.
Well, what do you think of that old goat Jim Cobbett getting himself hitched?
It's a fine thing, I'd say.
Well, Jim's no older than you are, Hank Lewis.
No older, maybe. A lot less respectable.
Now you're talking your usual nonsense, Hank.
Am I, Marshal? What about Jim's first wife who disappeared off of that place he had up north on Hackberry Creek? Just plain disappeared, she did. Jim never explained that, and nobody ever saw her again either.
Oh, you're worse than an old woman with your gossip, Hank.
Jim's never done anything to you, Hank.
Nothing except stake his homestead on the only spring south of the Smoky that didn't dry up. Cheated me out of it, that's what.
He filed his claim 2 weeks before you did, Hank, and everybody knows it.
Sneaked into town, that's what he did. Sneaked into town, behind my back.
Still telling your lies, ain't you, Hank Lewis?
Now, you keep away from me, Jim. Keep away.
I've never bothered you, Hank. But I hear you talking around Lila. When she gets here, I'll hurt you. I'll hurt you bad.
What is it you want to hide from her, Jim? Maybe that business about your first wife?
All right, don't touch that gun, Hank. Not a move.
You arrest him, Marshal. You saw it.
Get up.
Put him in jail now. I didn't touch him.
Shut up! Now, you're just lucky you weren't killed. Now, you get out of here and stay away from Jim. It's his wedding day, and if I find you bothering him again, I'll throw you in jail. Now, go on, move.
It's fine. Fine, all we got around here, man, gets tight enough.
Sorry to make trouble, Marshal, but I won't hold for his making that talk around Lila.
Oh, forget it, Jim. Just keep clear of him for a while. What time's the wedding?
About 3:00. At least that's when the preacher said he'd come down.
It'll be at the church, won't it, Jim?
Well, no. The preacher thought maybe it'd be better to do it somewhere else. It's because of...
Yeah, sure, Jim. You know, Dodge City House would be a fine place, wouldn't it?
That's just what I'd planned, Marshal. I brought a jug of corn in with me in case anyone came around, maybe.
Jim, I wouldn't miss it for the world. I'm going to be there for sure.
Yeah, me too, Jim. I certainly do enjoy weddings. I never got married myself, but I sure do like to watch.
See you later, Jim.
Sure, Marshal.
We'll be there, Jim. Bye.
Jim's bride, Lila, turned out to be a handsome, high-strung woman with nervous black eyes and a manner that bespoke a gentle breeding and background. I watched her and I wondered how she'd ever make out in this crude, raw country she'd chosen to come to. It was never mentioned how she and Jim had got together, but the few friends who gathered for the wedding didn't care. We were all pleased that Jim finally had a wife to break the loneliness that he'd set upon himself for so long. And after the brief ceremony at the Dodge City House, we told him so.
Well, it's about time, Jim. If you don't mind my saying so, ma'am, you should have filed on him long ago.
Why, yes. I mean, of course.
Open the jug on the table there, Si. It's good corn.
Well, thank you, Jim. My throat is might dusty.
Help yourselves to the liquor, boys.
Thank you.
Yes. Well, congratulations, Jim. And Miss Cobbett, my best wishes to you, ma'am.
Thank you, Marshal Dillon.
Now, you make Jim bring you to town and see us once in a while. He never came in much when he was alone out there.
Oh, I'm sure he will, Marshal.
I sure hope so, ma'am.
Help yourself to the jug there, Chester.
Well, thank you, Jim. If I can get it away from Si long enough, I will.
You stay in here tonight, Jim?
Well, no, Marshal. I brought the wagon on account of Lila here, and it's a slow way of traveling. Take a day and a half at best.
But where will we sleep tonight, Jim?
Oh, I got some blankets, Lila. We'll be fine.
You mean out on the prairie?
Well, sure. We'll bed down in the wagon if you're afraid of snakes.
Oh, snakes can't get to you if you're in the wagon, ma'am.
But what about everything else? Indians.
No Indians have been seen around here for months, I know.
Oh, no, you're wrong, Jim. A man from Walnut Creek told me he run into some Pawnees a couple weeks ago. Only about a dozen, though.
Did they say?
No, the the dead one, Marshal.
Yeah, you see, Lila?
Well, they didn't bother him because he saw him first. He hid himself under a bank in the creek.
Are there many Indians around?
Oh, no, very few, man.
Well, the army's been after him pretty steady ever since them crows raided the Gillette place. The Indians been making themselves scarce the last few months.
What happened at the Gillette place?
They had a little trouble, that's all, Lila.
Little trouble to kill Bob and rode off of Mrs. Gillette and the child, that's all.
Oh, no.
Si, why don't you go get yourself another drink, huh?
Well, I was just thinking about doing that. Well, now, I suppose it'll be easier than Mrs. Gillette once she learns to talk Crow, but still, it's a hard life on a white woman, suddenly being made a squaw.
Oh,
the jug's almost empty, Si. You better hurry, huh?
By golly, hey, fellas, I got another swatter coming up.
Liquor's working on Si, Lila. Don't pay no
mind. Jim, is it true what he said about that poor woman?
Now, Lila, don't you fret about that.
Is it true? I want to know, Jim.
Yes.
Jim, if you stayed in Dodge City tonight, well, you could start out before dawn tomorrow.
Oh, maybe no, Marshal. Jim thinks it best we leave tonight.
There's nothing to fear, Lila, but if you'd rather stay, we can...
No, we'll go, Jim. If you'll excuse me, I'll go change into something more suitable. Goodbye, Marshal.
Goodbye, ma'am. We'll see you in Dodge City real soon, I hope.
Of course. I'll be down shortly, Jim.
Maybe it was best that way for Lila to face out her first night on the prairie not far from Dodge. Nothing would bother them at close to town, and it'd make it easier for her on the next night. And they left. And that's all we heard about them for a month or so. Dodge City was fairly quiet except for 1 week when a Texas herd arrived. Two boys were killed the next night and another a few days after. But then things cooled off and became peaceable again.
Hank Lewis is in town, Mr. Dillon.
Oh, no, Chester. Well, there ought to be a law against it, that's all.
He said he was coming here to see you in a few minutes.
Look, you talk to him, Chester. I think I'll go upstairs and pick on the doc for a while.
Oh, he doesn't want to see me, Mr. Dillon. I'll send him up when he comes.
Chester, no.
Yes, sir, but he'll ask me where you are, sir, and then what am I going
to
tell him?
Marshal, I want to talk to you.
Well, all right, Hank. Go ahead, talk.
You think I was lying about Jim Cobbett, don't you? Well, listen to this, Marshal. Lila's disappeared, too.
What?
I saw it with my own eyes. I mean, I saw she isn't there.
What are you talking about, Hank?
I'm telling you, Marshal, Lila's gone, just like Jim's first wife up on Hackberry Creek. She's plain disappeared.
Well, go on.
Well, I got a runty bay mare that's always running off, and I rode by Jim's place to see if he'd seen her. Jim was just sitting there, and he'd hardly pay me any mind at all. He was all alone, and when I asked him about Lila, he just walked off, wouldn't say a word.
Well, maybe she was just out on the prairie somewhere.
Then she stayed a long time. I was back next day and still didn't see her. Stock's gone, too.
When was this, Hank?
About a week ago. Now, Marshal, I think you ought to get
out... I do my own thinking, Hank.
Well, all right. But you better get out there, Marshal. I've told you now.
Yeah, you've told me, and you can forget it. Just stay away from the Cobbett place, you understand?
All right, Marshal, I've done my duty. You better do yours.
Goodbye, Hank.
Well, I... Goodbye.
What are you going to do, Mr. Dillon?
Only thing we can do, Chester. Go saddle our horses, will you? I got some things to clean up around here.
Yes, Mr. Dillon.
Big doings at all Plymouth dealers. Tomorrow, go in and meet the new Plymouth, the new kind of low-priced car. And enter the big $25,000 Meet the New Plymouth contest. All you do is look her over, compare, ask questions. There'll be people on hand to explain the new body design, new type suspension, new springing, how they combine to give you a ride that's unbelievably smooth. The first truly balanced ride in the low-priced field. Believe me, you'll be enthusiastic. So just transfer that enthusiasm in 50 words or less to a contest entry blank. Tell what you like most about the new, truly balanced Plymouth for 53, That's all there is to it. And you may win a 53 Plymouth or one of hundreds of cash prizes. But entries must be mailed by Monday midnight. So hurry. Get an official entry blank containing all the easy rules tomorrow when you go in to meet the new 53 Plymouth.
Now, the second act of Gunsmoke.
Sure looks quiet around here, Mr. Dillon.
Yeah. Yeah, come on, they're probably inside.
You think Lila's here, don't you, sir?
Well, we'll soon find out, Chester. Hello, Jim.
Hello, Marshal. Chester?
Hello, Jim.
Come in.
How've you been, Jim?
Hank Lewes told you, didn't he, Marshal?
Where is she, Jim?
Hank Lewes said I killed her, didn't he, Marshal?
Oh, now, Jim, you know I don't pay any attention to what Hank Lewes says.
Then why'd you come here, Marshal?
To help you, if you're in trouble.
Lila isn't here, and I'm in trouble, all right.
Well, what happened, Jim? Where is she?
I don't know.
What?
Well, Indians, party of Crows, they took her. They took her.
Indians? My goodness.
You mean you were raided here?
Maybe 10 days ago, a war party, about 12 Crows.
Well, what happened?
Well, Lila was out there by the spring. It was just getting dark. I was sitting on the floor right there, men in the saddle I'd torn the stirrup off of, when I heard her come running up the path out back. She was all in a sweat and yelling for me. Lila, what is it?
Oh, I saw something out there. Oh, Jim. Jim, I think it was an Indian.
Come inside, quick. Get on the floor in the corner there. How many did you see?
Oh, just him. I saw his skin behind that little rise. Oh, Jim, don't let him get
easy
me.
Easy now, Lila. Don't.
Well, I don't see a thing out of this window. Take a look over here. Nothing. Must have heard you yelling.
Oh, Jim, what'll we do?
Stand him off, that's all. Wait a minute, there's one.
Oh, no.
Getting hard to see.
Jim! The other side. They'll sneak up on the other side.
Might be one behind that log out there.
Oh, no.
But we'll just wait. Oh. They'll get bolder in the dark. I can pick them off easy.
Oh, Jim. Jim, they'll carry me off like they did that other woman. I can't stand it, Jim.
Here. Take that six-shooter.
Yes, I will. I will.
They won't take you while I'm alive. Oh. I promise you that, Lila. Wait a minute. They're down at the corral.
Oh,
they're after our horses. That'll show them. Here he goes. There was one behind that log.
Oh, Jim, I can't stand it.
They're sneaking up on us. We'll just wait. Let them get in the open. Wait till a little more. Then when they jump and run on us, I...
Well, go on, Jim. What happened then?
Yeah. What did they do when they rushed you?
Well, one of them must have got in the window behind me. When Lila screamed, I was knocked out. And when I come to, the engines was gone. Lila was gone, too.
Were you shot, Jim, or what?
No. Engine must have got behind me somehow and clubbed me, that's all.
Did you try to follow him?
How could I, Marshal? They run off. The horses stole them.
Yeah, I see.
Anyway, I was out a long time. There wasn't a sign of anybody when I come to.
Well, they could be in the Rocky Mountains by now. We'd never find them. I'll report this to Colonel Jenkins of Fort Dodge, and he can spread the word through the Army post.
Thanks, Marshal.
I'm sorry, Jim. But I guess that's all I can do for you.
Sure, Marshal.
Come on, Chester. Let's take a look around outside and then get back to Dodge City.
Yes, sir. So long, Jim. I sure am sorry it happened.
So long.
Jim's pretty broke up, Mr. Dillon.
Yeah.
That's terrible. And her a squaw now.
Yeah.
My, aren't those pretty, Mr. Dillon?
What?
Yeah, that bunch of columbine there, growing right in a row. I think I'll just put one in my hat.
No, wait a minute, Chester.
Huh?
I wouldn't pick them, Chester. They're too pretty to pick, huh?
Well, all right, sir. Jim's stock is gone, all right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Mr. Dillon, Jim Cobbett ain't the luckiest man in the world, is he?
No, he sure isn't, Chester. Come on, let's get out of here. It was the day after we got back to Dodge City that the trouble started, as I expected it would. Chester spread the story about the Indians kidnapping Lila Cobbett, and it wasn't long before some of the men began to question it. And a group of them, headed, of course, by Hank Lewes, came to see me.
Marshal, we want to know when you're going to arrest him.
Hank, it'd be better if you'd let somebody else do the talking. Your record against Jim Cobbett's pretty strong.
Marshal's right, Hank. You always did talk too much anyway.
I want justice done, that's all, and I mean to get it.
Oh, shut up, Hank. Marshal, Hank sort of talked us into thinking you don't aim to do anything about Jim Cobbett. Is that true?
Well, what's your idea, Merritt?
Well, go out there and arrest him and find Lila's body if you can.
You think Jim murdered her, is that it?
Looks that way. You sure don't believe his story, do you, Marshal?
No, not all of it.
Jim did her in just like his first wife, that's what.
It's a sure thing, Marshal, no Injuns would have stolen the woman left Jim lying there without scalping him. Injuns just being made that way.
Merritt, I don't know what happened out there, but I'm going to find out.
Then what are you waiting for, Marshal?
The doc.
The doc? What's he got to do with this?
Miss Prettyfew had a baby this morning. The doc was up all night and he's sleeping today. We're going to ride out to Jim's tomorrow.
Well, I don't know what you need the doc for, but we'll wait and ride out with you.
You won't ride anywhere, Hank. When I need a posse, I'll ask for it. And I don't want a single man of you anywhere near the Cobbett place. Is that clear?
Well,
all right, now get out of here. I got work to do.
It's a mighty lonely-looking place, Matt. Indeed.
I wonder what Lila Cobbett thought when she first saw it.
She must have been mighty fond of Jim to come here at all, seems to me.
Yeah. Well, I hope Jim's still there.
Isn't that him there? Down by the corral there, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And he's got a new horse. Hello, Jim.
What are you doing here, Doc?
I had to bring the doc, Jim. To perform a sort of autopsy.
Autopsy?
On Ms. Cobbett. It's necessary, Jim, or I wouldn't do it.
Marshal?
Now, don't do it, Jim. You wouldn't have a chance.
No.
Take his gun, Chester.
Yes, sir.
All right, Jim, let's you and me go on into the house, huh? I don't imagine you want to watch this.
Well, where is it, Matt?
You want to tell him, Jim?
Over there, under that row of columbines.
Well, I'll... So, that's why you wouldn't let me pick any, Mr. Dillon.
I watered the ground a lot to make it hard.
It was a good job, Jim. Come on, let's go in the house.
Shovels out back of the corral.
I'll get it. Yeah, all that water and it didn't do any good.
In the house, Jim sat with his back to the wall, his hands clasped tightly across his knees. He was so gaunt and leathery that I wondered if he'd bothered to eat anything at all since this had happened. He just sat there as if waiting to be sentenced and not caring very much one way or the other. Finally, Doc and Chester were finished, and they came into the house.
We put her back, Jim. Right where you had her.
Yeah. And it wasn't easy, Matt.
Yeah, I know. But what did you find?
Well, she was killed by a 45. Fired at close range. Bullet entered her head just under...
Never mind, Doc.
Jim's gun here is a 45, Mr. Dillon.
You want to tell us about it, Jim?
You think I killed her, Marshal?
Well, it looks that way, Jim. But I still can't believe it.
Thank you, Marshal.
If you did it, Jim, you're going to hang for it.
The crows didn't attack the house, Marshal. They never aimed to. They just dodged around out there, some of them, to cover for the ones that ran the stock off. They didn't want to fight, just to stalk.
Yeah, it's happened before.
Lila screamed and screamed. I guess she went kind of crazy. And then I heard a shot. First, I thought she was shooting at the engines, but then I saw her on the floor there. I didn't care after that. They could have come right in there. They could have done anything they wanted. I didn't care.
You'd given her your six gun, is that it?
Yes.
The crows didn't bother you after that? They just took the horses and left?
I didn't care about them. I buried Lila out there right away. And I sat there on the ground all night. Everything had been all right, Marshal, but when Hank Luce came by, I got scared. I didn't want to talk to him, but I knew what he'd say. So, I put water on the grave and tried to hide it. Except for the flowers I'd planted. I just couldn't not have planted flowers there.
Yeah, he's telling the truth, Matt. Yeah, Jim isn't lying.
Oh, no, sir, he certainly isn't.
There's no reason I know of why Jim should stand trial.
What about Hank Lewis, Mr. Dillon? He'll make trouble.
The three of us here have heard the story and seen the evidence. Hank's talk doesn't mean a thing. I have no cause to arrest Jim.
Then I can go, Marshal.
Go? Go where?
I don't want to live here anymore. It's like the other place up north after my first wife rode off. She just said goodbye and rode off one day. I was ashamed of that, so I never told nobody what happened. I left the place. Like I'm leaving this one.
Well, you got to settle down sometime, Jim.
No, I don't. I got bad luck both places. I won't settle down no more.
We won't stop you, Jim.
I think I'll go now, Marshal. I don't want to spend another night here. I'll get my things together.
Yeah. We'll wait outside. Come on, Chester. Doc. A half hour later, Jim was packed and ready to go. Silently, he shook hands with each one of us and then mounted and rode off. Yeah, the prairie had dealt hard with Jim Cobbett, but the man was too tough and dry not to survive somehow. He wouldn't try again to be happy, but he'd live. He'd make his way. We watched him disappear while the sun went and the land cooled and became still and quiet.
Hey, hurry! The Big Plymouth Contest closes Monday midnight. Your last chance to win a new 53 Plymouth free or a big cash prize.
Go to your nearby Plymouth dealers tomorrow. Meet the new Plymouth. Look it over stem to stern. Ask questions. Find out all about this new kind of low-priced car. Then, on an official entry blank, in 50 words or less, Tell what you like most about this great new beauty.
But remember, entries must be mailed by Monday midnight, so be sure to visit your Plymouth dealers tomorrow to pick up your contest entry blank and meet the new 53 Plymouth.
Gunsmoke, under the direction of Norman McDonald, stars William Conrad as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal. Tonight's story was specially written for Gunsmoke by John Meston, with music composed and conducted by Rex Corey. Featured in the cast were John McIntyre and Jeanette Nolan, with Paul Dubov, Jack Crucian, and Harry Bartell. Parley Bear is Chester and Howard McNear is Doc. Gunsmoke was brought to you by Plymouth, along with a reminder that you visit your Plymouth dealer tomorrow and enter the Meet the New Plymouth contest. Remember, entries must be mailed before Monday midnight. Clancy Cassell speaking. This is the CBS Radio Network.
The saddle is angular and long-legged. His skin is sun-dyed brown. The gun in his holster is gray steel and rainbow mother of pearl, its handle unmarked. People call them both the six-shooter. James Stewart as the six-shooter. A transcribed series of radio dramas based on the life of Britt Ponsett, the Texas plainsman who wandered through the Western territories, leaving behind a trail of still-remembered legends.
Sure didn't look like I was going to get much sleep that night. The Prospect Hotel was right in the middle of town, and from my room, I could hear just about everything went on outside.
Hold up a minute, George.
And there wasn't much I could do about the noise, either. It was too doggone hot to shut the window. The sun had been down for a couple of hours, but there wasn't any breeze, and my room being on the second floor, well, the heat just seemed to sort of hang there. Whew. Boy. Well, along about 10 o'clock, I finally managed to doze off. I wasn't exactly sound asleep, you understand. I was just sort of in between, you might say. What the Sam Hill is that? Huh. For a second, I thought maybe I dreamt that shot. And then I heard somebody come running out of the front door of the hotel and jump on a horse. And by the time I got across the room to the window, whoever it was had ridden out of sight. Well, I pulled on my pants. I headed downstairs. I was the first person to reach the lobby. Sid Tucker, he was the fellow who owned the hotel. Sid was standing behind the registration desk, hanging on with both hands. Hey, what happened, Sid? He opened his mouth to give me an answer, but the words just didn't come out. And he started to teeter a little bit from side to side, and then he toppled over. And when I got around behind the desk where he was lying, I saw the pink stain across the front of his shirt. It was getting redder every second.
Anything wrong here? I thought I heard a shot.
Britt? Well, it's Sid Tucker. You better get Doc Prince quick.
Well, sure, sure.
Oh, yeah, and get the sheriff, too, if you can find him, will you? I managed to carry Sid into the dining room, laid him out on the table. I figured the Doc might have to do some probing for that bullet in Sid's belly. And if Sid was in a good hard surface, he'd have a little easier time handling him. By this time, everybody in the hotel was crowding around, seeing what was wrong. Sid was still breathing, but there was a kind of a raspy noise with every breath he took, and the bleeding was worse than ever. Gee whiz, he was bad off, all right. There's no doubt about that. Well, it was about 10 minutes before Doc Prince got there. It seemed a lot longer, of course, but it was just about that time.
Now, just go on back to bed, everybody. Go on now. There's nothing you can do here. You'd just be in my way. Please, go on now. You stick around, Britt, if you don't mind.
Why?
Well, I might need somebody to help hold him down.
Oh, sure, sure. Sid's going to be all right, ain't he, Doc?
Well, I haven't even had a chance to examine him yet. Oh, now, come on, folks. Outside, please, outside. I'll let you know what his prospects are as soon as I find out myself.
I'm afraid that's not much of a bandage, Doc, but it's the best I could do under the circumstances.
Sure, sure, Britt. Looks like the bullet may have hit a kidney. Now, I told you folks... Oh, hello, Sheriff.
Howdy, Doc. Britt.
Oh, Sam.
How is he?
Not good, Sam. Not good at all. He's lost a lot of blood, and he's hemorrhaging pretty bad.
Mm-hmm. You around when it happened, Britt?
No, I heard a shot and I came downstairs as fast as I could, but he was alone when I got here.
Stop him.
Well, I'm not going to be able to do any digging for that bullet now. It's in too deep.
Listen, it sounds like he's coming too.
Yeah.
Doc, is it all right for me to try and talk to him?
Well, I reckon it won't make much difference one way or the other.
Now, Sid.
I got an awful pain in my belly.
Here, now, you just lie there easy, Sid. Don't do no moving around.
Hurts bad, Doc. Awful bad.
Yeah, now, you've been shot, Sid.
Shot?
You remember anything about it?
No, Sheriff. I'm afraid I don't. Oh, yeah, I recollect.
Yeah?
He told me to give him the box. A tin box with the money the folks asked me to keep for him.
You know who it was?
Your money, Britt. Your cash is in that box.
No, don't worry yourself about that.
Did you recognize him, Sid?
What?
The fellow who shot you. Did you get a look at him?
John Stringer.
Stringer, huh?
Must have been him. Leastways, he sure resembled that fella on the wanted posters on the wall here.
Sid?
He's not going to answer no more questions, Sam.
Yeah.
You think it was Stringer, Sam?
Well, could have been. I didn't know he was in these parts, but it's a kind of hold-up murder he's pulled before.
Yeah?
Guess there's only one way to find out for certain. Let's go, Britt.
What?
Pick up his trail if we can.
Yeah, but...
You'll come with me, won't you?
Well, sure, Sam, but... You think you need me, but there are plenty of local residents and make up a posse without
I'm not taking a posse, Britt. Might be morning before I could get one together, and by then his trail would be cold. Stringer rides alone, usually. I reckon the two of us can handle him. Your horse in the stable?
Yeah.
Well?
Yeah. All right, Sam. I'll get Scar and meet you out in front, huh? I'd heard about Johnny Stringer. He'd killed his first man when he was only 14 years old, and they said he'd managed at least one more every year since. He's still young, though, 21, 22. Supposed to be a handsome boy with black curly hair and brown eyes and a little scar on the side of his neck from a gunfight somewhere near Salt Lake City. I'd never met up with him in person. As a matter of fact, this was further south than he usually strayed. That is, if it was Stringer who'd killed Sid Tucker. Well, we got our horses, Sam and I, and started looking for the trail. The fella I'd heard ride off just after the shooting had been heading east toward the Furnace Hills, so we rode out that way. There was a lot of moon, and after milling around 15, 20 minutes, we spotted some fresh tracks along the creek at the edge of town. Of course, we still had no reason to be certain that this was the right trail. Hold on a minute, Sam. Whoa, Scar. Whoa.
What's the matter, Britt? Whoa.
Look, over there beside that cactus. What's that look like to you?
I don't see any. Oh, yeah.
Easy, boy. Easy.
That's the tin box Sid was talking about?
Yeah. Yeah, the kid must have shot the lock open.
Empty, huh?
Yeah.
Probably got tired carrying it.
Mm-hmm.
Hotel should have had a safe. Been telling Sid Tucker that for years.
Yeah, well, this box always served the same purpose.
Up till now.
Yeah, up till now.
Sid said he was keeping some of your money for you.
Yeah, a couple of months' pay.
That's too bad.
Oh, well, I'll get over it. Sid won't. Well, there's no point hanging on to this anymore, I guess.
Yeah, at least we know we're on the right track, Britt.
Yeah, that's something. All right, Scar, let's go. Well, he had an hour's head start, maybe more. And we had to take it pretty slow to be sure we wouldn't lose the trail. So it didn't seem like we had much chance of catching up to him. Not very soon, anyhow. But then just about dawn, when the eastern sky started to show a few slivers of orange and yellow, those tracks we were following took on a different look.
Britt?
Uh-huh?
See now? Something must have happened to his horse.
Yeah.
Feels like maybe he went lame.
Yeah, sure does, doesn't it?
You see here, Britt? You see? Oh, boy. Oh. Must have stopped to rest for a spell.
Mm-hmm.
Come on, boy. Don't seem like it did much good, though. Horse was lamer than ever when they started up again.
He couldn't have been making very much time here on, that's for sure.
Yep. Better keep our eyes open. Might be running into him any minute.
We were in the Furnace Mountains now, and the sun was coming up hot. Oh, this is going to be another scorcher, all right. You could feel everything start to warm up already. The trail we were following showed more and more signs that the horse was in pretty bad shape, and the places where he'd stopped to rest were getting closer and closer together until finally we saw the fellow on the saddle had just given up trying to ride and started moving out ahead on foot.
Oh.
Easy, easy, Scar. Easy.
Might as well leave the horses here, Britt. You can't be much further now.
Yeah. Sam.
Hmm?
Hey, over there in the cabin on the side of the ravine there.
Uh-huh.
Know whose it is?
No, I ain't never been on this slope before.
Well, somebody's living there. From the looks of that smoke, I'd say they're cooking breakfast.
Let's close in.
We started up the side of the ravine, moving slow, keeping the rocks for cover. It wasn't until we were about 20 yards away that I noticed the barn. Sitting in front of a clump of trees across a little clearing, we swung a little to our left. If we could just get over to the barn without anybody seeing us, then we could move into the cabin itself. But we were still in a place, and we had to get past that clearing first.
He ain't spotted us, Britt.
No, I guess not. If he's really here.
Look at those tracks leading into the barn. Same horse we've been following. I'd stake my life on it.
Yeah, they do look kind of familiar.
Best thing we can do now is rush the back door to the cabin. If it's unlocked, we can be inside before he even knows what's happened. If it ain't, we'll have to shoot our way in.
All right, Sam. You're calling the turn. It was about 30, 40 feet from the barn to the cabin itself. Sam rocked back on his heels and he gave a lunge forward. He was a big man, but he sure couldn't move plenty fast. All I could do was keep up with him. The back door was unlocked, all right, and we charged inside like a couple of Texas steers.
Get your hands up! Get him up quick!
Mother, the Kenneth!
Well, who are you?
Who are you? What are you doing here? Why'd you break in like this?
We don't mean any trouble, miss.
Then why do you come?
You
think to rob me, no? Well, I have nothing to steal. You have picked the wrong cabin, senor.
Yeah. Sort of looks like maybe we have.
Of The Six Shooter, starring James Stewart as Britt Ponsett.
Well, she was a real pretty girl, about 20, jet black hair and black eyes that sort of flashed sparks when she talked. At least they were flashing sparks at us for a while, but finally we managed to get her quieted down. We explained that we weren't trying to rob her. We were just looking for an outlaw who was somewhere in these parts.
No. No. I have seen no one.
You're sure about that?
Si. There has been nobody. Last night, last week, nobody.
You live here all alone?
This cabin belonged to my father, Alfredo Mendez. He's dead now. 6 months. I live alone.
I must be kind of lonely, a young girl like you.
I'm busy. I take care of cows. I plant seeds. There will be food for winter.
Well, I think I'll take a look around outside, the barn maybe.
Well, you look there. I tell you, there's no one.
Yeah, that's what you told us.
Want me to go with you, Sam?
No. You might check the rest of the cabin, though, Britt.
Sure.
You think I lie? You think I would protect this bandido you tell me about? I am Maria Gonzalez Mendez. I do not lie.
All right. Now, don't get excited, Maria. If he should be in this neighborhood and you didn't know about it, well, it'd be for your own good if we turned him up, wouldn't it?
Si, I guess so. But your friend, he does not trust me.
Well, Sam's a sheriff. He can't afford to take chances. You mind showing me the rest of the place here?
If you like. This is the men room. You call it the parlor.
Uh-huh.
Here is where I sleep.
What's that door over there?
The bedroom of my father.
Oh.
It is still as it was when he...
Yeah.
You're satisfied?
I'm satisfied Stringer isn't in the cabin, Maria.
You're like your friend. You do not trust me either. Why would I hide this man if he is what you say he is?
I sure don't know.
He killed someone last night?
That's right.
You did not see him do it?
No, but the man he shot, well, he recognized Stringer.
Stringer? It is a funny name.
Yeah?
I never heard of him.
Well, he's pretty well known. This isn't his only killing by a whole lot.
Has nothing to do with me.
He's not in here, Sam.
Yeah. Well, he's not in the barn either. But his horse is.
What?
No, senor, no. It is my horse, the one you saw.
I suppose you've been riding him all night, huh?
I do not know what you mean.
Well, somebody sure been giving him a workout. They even rode him after he went lame, too. Now, why don't you start telling us the truth for a change? How about it?
It does not matter. He has gone. I gave to him another pony, and he rides away. Long before you get here, he is gone.
Well, now I'll be...
You will never catch him now. That is why I pretend I think you want to rob me when you come.
I might have known.
But he has killed no one. And his name, it is no Stringer. It is Johnny Davis. He tells me that you will look for him and that you will blame him for things he does not do.
Sure, that's what he told you, and you had to believe him, didn't you?
He would not lie to me.
Well, I guess you ain't the first senorita that got taken in by Johnny Stringer. Even his wife. He's talked her into putting up with him on and off for the last 5 years, and she's supposed to be a pretty decent girl.
His wife?
That's right, Maria. Johnny's married. Has been since he was, 18 or so.
It is not my concern, this Johnny Stringer.
It isn't, huh? Your friend Davis, has he got black hair, curly black hair?
Many men have black hair.
And many men don't have a scar on their neck. Right here.
A scar?
We're just wasting time, Britt. We got a trail to pick up.
Yeah.
Wait. You lied to me about this scar. You tried to make me think that my Juanito is the same man you look for. You lie about him.
I told you the truth, Maria.
But he could not be married. No, it is not so. He's promised to marry me.
How long has Stringer been staying here?
No, senor. He's not Stringer. His name is Davis. Johnny Davis.
How long has he been here?
2 weeks. He stays in my father's room 2 weeks. I find him with a bullet in his leg. He's hurt. I make him well. He says he loves me.
Yeah.
He goes yesterday to arrange for the wedding.
He couldn't marry you, Maria. If he did, it wouldn't be a real marriage.
No, senor, no. He says he loves me. It is so. I feel it in my heart. If he does not have love for me, I would know.
Britt.
Yeah?
He's got a fresh horse. We'd better get moving.
Yeah, sure. Come on.
He is no horse, senors.
What?
The man with the scar, he has no horse.
Where is he, Maria?
You tried to fool me that he's married, that he has a wife. You make this up to fool me.
Where is he?
The barn.
But I already...
The loft of the barn, that is where he hides, the loft. Now I have told you the truth. You must...
Yeah?
You must tell me the truth about Johnny. There's no reason to fool me any longer. You must tell me the truth.
But it is the truth, Maria. All of it. And I'm sorry.
You ready, Britt?
Yeah, I'm ready. We walked outside. We didn't draw our guns. We just strode along as though we were going to go right past the barn. And when we got even with the door, Sam nodded and we took a couple of quick steps and pressed flat against the building.
Stringer? We know you're in there. Stringer!
Sam waited a minute or so, and then we started inching toward the open door. I took my cue from him, and I started moving in the opposite direction. Yeah, he was up there all right. And he was in a good position to cover that door, too, if either one of us so much as got near it.
We ain't no hurry, Stringer. We can wait.
You wait a long time, mister.
Sam? Yeah? Is there any other way of getting inside? Around the back, maybe?
There's a window, but it's too small to crawl through.
Isn't that he's using up a lot of bullets?
Trouble is, we don't know how many loads he's carrying.
Yeah.
Guess we'll just have to try smoking him out. There ain't no breeze. Ought to be safe enough.
What about the horse?
He's just inside the door. He ain't tied up or nothing. He'll come out before it gets too bad.
Okay. I'll go around and back.
I managed to get to the rear of the barn by hugging the sides of the building and keep out of range. Every once in a while, I could hear Stringer get off another shot. But he was still aiming towards Sam, trying to make sure that we didn't rush him. I found some dry brush and pushed it up against the barn. And then I broke through the window with the butt of my gun. And that told Stringer where I was, and he sure didn't like it. I flattened down, and I stayed that way until I got a handful of brush burning. And then I raised up a couple of inches and then threw it inside. I didn't know whether it would catch or not, so I stayed there where I was so I could be sure. Yeah, I must have been lucky. It had hit some rags and papers. And anyway, a good steady stream of smoke was pouring out the broken window, and Stringer would have to start moving out pretty soon. He wasn't doing any shooting, so I made my way around the front again. The smoke was starting to come out the door, and the whole inside of the barn was filled up with it. Never know about a horse during a fire. Some of them would just stand right in the middle of it and not make a move to save themselves. But there was only one direction Maria's pony could head, and that was outside, so he finally put his nose down and he came galloping past. About a minute later, Stringer followed his example. He was holding a bandana over his mouth with one hand, and the other hand was stuck up in the air. We were both covering him, Sam and me. But it didn't look like we had anything to worry about. And then I saw a flicker of metal behind that bandana. But before I could do anything about it...
What is that?
She ran in front of us and threw herself in his arms.
I figured you wouldn't let me down, honey.
He pulled her tight against him, and the bandana fell away from the revolver he was holding.
All right, just drop him. I said drop him, unless you want to shoot her in the back.
Johnny.
Drop him, I said. And I ain't going to wait much longer.
Okay, Stringer.
You too, mister. Now, honey, just stay close to me. We're getting out of here.
Will you take me, Johnny?
What's the difference?
You take me to get married like you promised? Remember, Johnny, you promised me this will be our
wedding. Sure, I remember, but we got other things to think about now. Where'd they leave their horses, Maria? Did they tell you?
I got on my mother's white dress. The dress she was wearing.
Yeah.
I pressed it nice. The lace. I look very pretty, Johnny.
Oh, shut up. What about their horses?
Why don't you tell her you won't marry her, Stringer? That you can't, even if you wanted to.
I wouldn't do a lot of talking if I was you, mister.
Tell her about your wife in Utah and some of the other girls who helped you over a tight spot. You're not the first, Maria, not by a long shot.
I warned you, mister. I told you...
He says, why do you care, Johnny, if they are not true? But they are true. Aren't they, Johnny?
I never said they was true.
You don't have to say. I know. In my mother's white dress with the lace... I will not wear it today.
What if I am married? That doesn't mean that we can't...
Maria.
For a second, I didn't realize what had happened. Stringer was staring at Maria like he'd never seen her before, and then he started to raise the revolver he was holding, his finger on the trigger, but he never finished squeezing it. He slid out of Maria's arms and fell face down on the dirt. It was a small knife with a fancy silver handle buried deep in his back, right between his shoulder blades.
You will want to take me with you now. Not Juanito. But I would like to change my dress first. I think I would like to wear the white one with the lace. After all.
Well, we waited around till we were sure the fire was out, and then we took Maria back to Prospect. I don't know whether what she'd done was murder or not. Stringer was holding a gun on us. Maybe she saved our lives. And he sure had it coming to him. There wasn't much doubt about that. I gave Judge Ricker a statement, and then I left Prospect. I guess if there was a trial, Maria must have come out of it all right. At least I hope so.